some public facilities committee, and tonight we are beginning with a public hearing, a presentation and a public hearing, which is required as part of any major capital project in the city. We refer to it casually as the 558 process. And what it means is this is the opportunity the council is given, although we've been looking at this project all along, and deeply. But this is our formal opportunity to review and accept the site plan and schematic design. Can you find seats, folks? No? We're not able to take up this process. We're not able to begin this process until we get a letter from the design review committee recommending, because they have reviewed this and they have reviewed this many times over as well. And they are quasi-professional entities who are volunteer citizens with expertise. Who advise us, and we count on them to advise us when a project has met certain criteria of during each phase of its development. But this one is significant, and they have given us that letter of recommendation, which we received in our packet. They normally recommend and then offer guidance for the next phase, which is design, development, and construction documents in this case. So we have that, and with no further ado, I'm going to begin with the presentation. We're joined by the building department and the architect, so I'm going to let Alex Valcarce introduce everyone. He might be telling us we're going to have a little technical difficulty or that we can't start the
Our backup plan has arrived, so we'll start.
Excellent.
And Lena will be double duty as IT and architect. So I will start. I am Alex Valcarce from the Public Buildings Department, as Councilor Clausley said.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I have to begin the meeting by introducing the committee.
Everybody has an audio too.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm Deb Crossley, and I chair the committee. I'm a counselor at large from Ward 5. On the committee first is, first of all, we have Mark Laredo from Counselor at Large from Ward 7, Barbara Broussal Glazer, Ward Counselor from Ward 3, President and Counselor at Large from Ward 1, Scott Lennon, and Victoria Danberg, Counselor at Large from Ward 6, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We also have Counselor Ruth Ann Fuller, also from Ward 7. We have Councilor Offenbach from Ward 2, Councilor Lutz from Ward 2, and I believe we will be joined by the Vice Chair of the Committee, Susan Albright, who was trying to get on early flight so that she could make this back from the business meeting today. And she had texted me that she thought she'd be able to do that, so we are expecting her. So, apologies.
Oh no, you're doing good.
We're also joined by members of the school committee, Margaret Albright, Diana Fisher-Domberg, I think I saw Chairman Matt Hill, and any other celebrities
that I can see. So we'll put Liam on the spot. He's the new Liam Hurley.
Oh, Liam, that's
the CFAO, correct? For the school department. Since Sandy Durian retired, and he is now...
Excellent. And we also have Attorney Judy Young with us, who's been watchful of this project, and Maureen Lemire.
Eva
Thompson, Cabot Interim Principal, and Maureen Lemire, our Chief of...
This is my pleasure.
Okay, I'm out of wind-up here. So, take it away.
I will start. With us tonight from our team is... Lino Felipe from Genesco Design, the architect, who's trying to get our little backup in place. We also have Tom Murphy from NV5, the owner's project manager, Bill Brown from Sardina Brown. Brown Sardina. My apologies. Landscape architect, also Fred King from Schofield, civil engineers. John Rich, WC Rich, our construction manager. So I learned how to walk everybody through this. As, again, Councilor Fosley indicated, we've been working on this for over 2 years. I think people have followed along fairly closely, and we sort of, you know, been here for a very long time. We've tried to put together, I think, the sort of more high-level overview and touch upon the issues that people were very concerned about that we had looked at, and all of those presentations that were done, all those things are on through public facilities and MD5 links are available to folks. So I'm going to get started with that. I'm going to try to see if maybe we turn off the lights and maybe that helps a little bit, at least for the first few slides, and then And then perhaps we will be able to leave the lights on.
The problem with the technology that we have or the film that we produce it?
It looks like it seems to work okay today.
Okay.
So,
it's got a funny blue tinge on
it. No, it's got that projector is on that. Now we have that one.
That's
thing,
what it
so.
Looks like. Yeah.
Right. So we're either hopeful that we can immediately start with the projector.
So while that fills the void, I'm one of the three counselors who sit on the Cabot School Building Committee. Unfortunately, the others who aren't with us at the moment. I think we're really excited to be here tonight. It took us a while. The first major decision was to not build an entirely new school, and then, but rather to keep the wonderful historic core building. And then the architect, Reno in particular, really tried hard to find the best site plan that would both meet the educational needs and work with the existing building. And it took a while and a lot of money to get there, but we're here tonight with the approval of Mass Historic, Newton Historic, the school department, the school committee, and the school building committee. So it took a while, but we're in a really exciting place tonight.
Thank you. I think we have a good image, but we need to turn off the one behind it. Okay, we're ready to go. Thank you so much for the backup.
Thank you. Okay.
Sitting while I'm in Boston.
So I'll go from where Lucianne was. Over the course of the 2 years, number of decisions, finding a site, no alternate site, staying on this site, you versus Ab Reno, many discussions, lots of parties, decision to do the Ab Reno, keep the building, many discussions about the placement of the elements on the site, how they affected views, what views were important. And we'll walk through those items. If you want to go to the next slide. So the overall site situation, I'm going to use one slide to cover a number of items. Most of everybody is familiar. This is the historic Cabot School. This red outline is the existing addition that was put onto the building and the area that we will be taking down. This this white line through here represents the property line between Parkview and Cabot Park. Savage Park remains as its open space, and working through last year with Parks and Rec Commission, we had an approval to provide some shared parking that merged over the property line there, and the ability to create some common emergency access that services both the pool and the existing Cabot Park. So a couple of early planning principles. One very big desire was to link the school with the park, have a continuous ground plane, and create a much safer environment and eliminate this portion of Park View. Again, lots of discussions, pros and cons. Ultimately, the consensus was that it was far better to create this continuous ground plane and really unify the two parcels. And I think that's been very successful. Within this site circulation plan, again, early planning principles were to separate bus drop-off, van loading and unloading, and parent drop-off. This is 23 Parkview, which the city ultimately purchased and now becomes part of the school, the school parcel. In early versions, people will recall that we had a turnaround and we went back, and there was a lot of pluses and minuses to that. Getting this parcel really opened up the ability to create this through connection and really separate those three functions. That makes it much, much faster and easier for the flow of traffic. The grouping of the two parcels and continuing getting that ground plane creates opportunities for continuous, say, pedestrian access to the school without having to cross another street, and it opened up the possibility for ancillary drop-off to determine that that was desired, and the ability to provide some additional parking that we will look at. And so that really is what coalesced into the plan in terms of its access and those locations. In terms of the school functions, and we'll look at a couple of plans, this is the larger map, the larger addition with cafeteria and functions on the ground floor, classrooms up above. Smaller library addition, more sympathetic and compatible with the residential street of Bridges, and the gymnasium, which was everywhere from here to here to out here. But in the end, it was determined, and we were able to work with Newton Historic in a way, and we will look at some views that kept the mass back, put the mass on the larger open space, and provided a link which will be able to keep the end of the building exposed on the inside, which is what people were missing and wanted to be able to have. If we go to the next slide, we spent quite a bit of time on parking and program, and as we all know, parking is always at a premium. It's a very tight location, as most of our school sites are. Again, actual site is less than 2 acres, and so with some creativity and getting some additional parcels, closing the street, we were able to, again, get our full program in a way and provide the three separate zones with some additional parking in the current configuration. There's parking in a big parking lot sort of along here, and then parking that used to happen along Parkview. And that parking would now happen along Bridges, the new additional parking that we can place within this new zone that we've been able to get, the parking that we share with Parks and Rec, and then the additional parking that we can get along East Parkway, with again connections that come back to the school and very visible, and really make those useful. We also have the ability to get some other parking as we study and see what will work out. The basic need is about 90 to 100 spaces, and it's arranged because there are part-time programs. Some of those programs overlap, and so we know that it's about 90 to about 100 spaces. So we see that in the parking that I just described on Bridges, Parkview, Eastside Parkway, and the school site, we get about 82. We did a parking study last fall of 2015, with Cabot Village and determined with them that there are about 20 spaces that they would be happy to share and make an accommodation, and we would need to create some access, but that provides a place for some additional parking. And then, of course, we would work with the traffic folks and determine, you know, just how much more parking would we put along Eastside Parkway. And again, this parking can serve the park as well. But clearly, we can get within the range of the spaces we need and not get too far out into other streets. We will develop a managed parking plan, working with folks like Dave Kosis and the traffic folks who have that experience. So if we kind of move on, I guess if you back up one slide for me, I just wanted to point out, so these two locations mark the main entrances to the school building. Generally speaking, the kids will collect up in here and be able to access in through this area here. But this is the main entrance during the day, so when this lot is available for short-term daytime parking between the hours of drop-off and pick-up, when that's not happening, you have access in here. These are all accessible spaces. And then we have some secondary access, which can be used either to link through and come back into this plaza, or during inclement weather, students can be staged at the gym, or this other secondary access point. Students dropped off here can be staged in the cafeteria, and then the kids can come out directly from the cafeteria at lunchtime, come out to recess, and then go back into the building, and always being in a nice contained area that's bound by the building and the park and separate from the vehicle traffic. So now if we go to the next slide, many meetings with Newton Public Schools, the principal, the educators, the staff. All of the program has been vetted out. The program has been previously accepted by the MSTA. I didn't mention that at the beginning, but I think most people understand that the project is funded with a grant from the MSTA. That's what we're working towards. But just quickly, these were the entrances that I highlighted. And then this is your cafeteria, kitchen area, the service coming off of bridges, art, the library space, and the gym. And we had a lot of discussions and studies, because you put all the maps here, and this plan gives us one of the significant benefits is that by distributing these major spaces, these activities, you don't create congestion and noise within the school building as students come and go and move. And we really studied that a lot, and while people really felt that they really kind of wanted to see it all maybe lumped together, realistically it doesn't work so well. This also makes the main school building, the existing building, the focal point and the point through which everything, you know, moves through and accesses the different points. And again, that was deemed very good by both the historic and by NASA Store. So we go to the next slide. This is the second floor with kindergarten and first grade. These are the kindergarten spaces. We have some project areas, very similar in design concept to both Angel and Service, and utilizing ObjectNet to work with the geometry in the walls within the existing building, creating the same kinds of spaces with slightly different configurations. And I skip the third floor for now on the people have questions. It is just similar to this elevation. And now we will get to the elevation, and those are much better than we can actually see. So, lots of discussions about this view and the gymnasium, and then these additions and how they would relate to the existing. And through a lot of study and dialogue, the fundamental underlying principles are that the additions all are of a more, they work together and have a continuity of their own and are separate and distinct from the historic building, which is what one would normally want to do. You would try to see as much of the historic building as one could. Lino and Janisco have worked a lot. We've got a lot of discussions and looking at glass and use glass corners and how to, you know, not to throw some language out, but literally, you know, what we say in the business is dematerialize the new solid areas from the historic pieces. And this actually allows you to see inside. This is a 2-3-story space, which will have a new interconnecting stair and will allow us to have the existing facade. Lots of interest about Humpty Dumpty. He has a new home in this section. We cannot rebuild the existing stair. We studied that. It's just practical. But we will build a new stair and then create a home for Humpty Dumpty. But the point is that with some lighting and and by having glass and then some more background material on the new walls, we literally can keep at least this facade as part of an interior space. So while we understood that some people were dismayed that you couldn't see this corner from a distance, with Newton Historic, we were able to get to that solution proposed by some of their members and I think really worked successfully. If we go to the next elevation, so this would be the Bridges Street elevation, but we can use this for, this is the library space, again, lower level, a little more simplified, more sympathetic to the residential streets. Danisco spent a lot of time, and again with a lot of input and reviews with the DRC, analyzing the window fenestration, its modulation, its size, and trying to work with something that is sympathetic with the traditional punch openings in a way that picks up some of the lines, some of the character, and some of the proportions. And that also was generally very well accepted, both by Newton Historic and in the comments that Mass Historic made. Eventually, we're using brick and other masonry materials. Again, not saying that they are going to match up. We want to make sure that the building always remains visible. So let's go to the next slide. This would be the north elevation, again, somewhat broken up in a way to not create such a large mass. Again, utilizing some windows and some techniques so that we're not spilling light out into the abutters and working with that section where we now have our drop-off cafeteria and the cafeteria below. This is the gymnasium in the background across the plaza in the glass area there. We'll keep going. And this is the view on the park side. Again, the gymnasium and creating some glassier corners. The new access and entry and connection between the new classroom wing and the existing. Working again with the fenestration and keeping that rhythm and working on that. And these things will continue to be developed in design development. And we have an ongoing discussion on the fenestration and the glass. This is the cafeteria, and so we're kind of stuck between wanting to get a lot of light, yet trying to create something that can continue, in the spirit of the facade above. Go to the next image. So this gives you just the sort of bird's eye view, which really shows nicely how all of the ground plane and really connects very nicely, creates, I think, a very nice public realm. The forecourt on Cabot, which sets the gym back and provides relief in this location. The bus drop-off shelters in a way that it can be actively loaded and unloaded without impeding the traffic that continues on Cabot. The smaller lot and the drop-off lot. And again, smaller, broken up elevations around the center building. Go to the next slide. This would be the view from Cabot. We took the buses out. So again, the gymnasium, the glass corners, and you would be able to see more. Some, it would be a little more transparent. You'd have, some more views inside. The keeping this facade, this is very important and very, it's very iconic within that street. And then opening it up to the street so you can actually find Cabot School sitting on Cabot Street. And the next elevation is the view from Eastside Parkway. Again, we propose our proposed parking, we'll develop our paths, and again, trying to, you know, keep this as a feature that can be seen with its cupola, and then the glassy corners, and then the lower elements of the gym, and the facade that is working, and being complementary to the rhythm created by the original building. Next slide. So, where are we? We're here. We're at, as Councilor Crosley indicated, we're at 558 site plan approval, which is site plan and schematic design. On November 9th, the MSDA board will vote on their project scope and budget agreement. We've already met with staff, and they're all happy, and so we sure that we'll be, you know, be able to move forward. We that vote sets the scope and budget. So we have docketed the basic budget. If something were adjusted, we would then be able to update if we needed to. But I don't foresee anything really. Finance would then be the next approval, and then the final council vote for site plan approval. And that ends our presentation, and we can answer any questions that anybody has.
Before we do that, so for our discussion and public hearing, and if we don't have too many questions, I do want to open the public hearing. I just want to read the item for the record. It's item number 66-16, Parenth 2. The Design Review Committee petitioning pursuant to Section 558 for schematic design and site plan approval to construct an addition and renovate Cabot Elementary School located at 229 Cabot Street, Newtonville, the city's newly acquired property at 23 Parkview Avenue, Newtonville, and a portion of Parkview as abutting the school site in the future. So I think the first question is coming from Mark Laredo.
So I think I said before, this site plan looks great to me. And we've obviously spent a tremendous amount of time on it. I just think the layout of the school is really nice, and I love the fact that it's connected to schools of park. I think that's great. You seem to have solved the parking problem. Just a good job. Really good job. I just spent a long time coming to Catholic schools. A few very minor questions. One, are all the utilities going to be underground in the street?
Yes. We actually are working with EverSource. There's some overhead power lines here. They're going to go away because they're not needed. They actually are going to back feed the houses that are here. So we have to get rid of the poles. So they will go away. And that is, you know, we've got that lined up. Obviously, we want a site plan approval before we go out and do something. But yes, and then all the new utilities will tie in and be underground.
Okay. Second, school is air conditioned. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Third, the bus drop-off area, I just put this out there for consideration. I wonder if during the day that could be used for short-term parking?
So the short answer is no,
okay.
And I will tell you why.
Sure.
This has a dual purpose. It's bus drop-off, but it's emergency
action.
Fire response, first responders will arrive right here.
Okay.
This is designed, and we've worked with them, and then they come right in the front door to their fire alarm control panel. So we will sign this, that this will have to be for authorized vehicles only, and people will really need to understand that.
So. Fine, makes perfect sense. The last comment is about your additional parking. I think it's great if Cabot Village is willing to accommodate you. I do think there's ample room in Eastside Parkway where you had, I think, another 18 or so cars. Yep. I mean, that seems to me you could do it very safely. There's fencing there. So you're not going to have to worry about kids crossing in the wrong place. The road is wide enough to actually make a traffic calming measure, and you know the distance to walk to school is quarter mile. So that's it. Thank you.
And
Susan
and
Dizzy?
So thank you for the presentation. It's been a long and torturous
The long and windy road.
But I think the neighbors expect, we've got a lot of things to improve this plan. And the biggest things are the traffic and circulation, drop off and pick up, and we really have to thank the project for being willing to sell their house. That made a huge difference. and the bus drop off where it is made a huge difference. We didn't get everything that we hoped for, and the neighbors didn't get everything we hoped for. And frankly, I think that if the plan had been, if we thought about things George Walter from the beginning, we might have had more luck getting everything that we wanted, but we got a lot of the things that the neighbors wanted. I had a question about the bus. When the kids are dropped off in the morning, because I was reading the reports, and I was wondering, if the buses come, maybe a private person would know the answer to this. So if the kids come early, like 10 minutes before school opens, wouldn't they want to go around and wait and come in the main door rather than go in the...
Right, so again, it's kind of operational, but they do have the opportunity to come around. Kind of similar to Angel, where you kind of walk around the library or the plaza. So yes, that option is always there, and that's what we envision, that most everyone will come to go there. But as the school, you know, and the principal run the school, this is just an option. And then, of course, this is good for after-hours access,
yeah,
for making the gym accessible, right, and being able to keep the rest of the school closed off. So,
yeah, it might have been the planning department report that said that the bus kids are going to go in the front door. And I thought, you know, if school's not open yet, they probably are going to go with the rest,
right,
of the kids.
Correct. The intent is that everybody would end up here, and I think that, you know, that's the concept that works at Angel, which has been working well. It's the way Zervis is set up, everybody's funneled into that plaza, and that's what we're doing here. I mean, this access, of course, provides accessibility. So, you know, these vans and the drop-off, you know, that's why that is nice, that that's there and affords the ability to get there. The whole thing's accessible, and they certainly could go around, but there were some concerns, I remember, way back when we had some commentary in feasibility from the MSPA and sort of how that works, if I recall.
So one other critical thing that should be mentioned is that those two houses that are left on Cabot Street are no longer an island. I mean, at least they're sort of cut.
No,
exactly the way they were, they are now. They're,
yes,
part of the community. And
this is the commemorative tree, and
right,
the keeping there, and bear shelter, and I think that that worked out well too.
So the only other thing I wanted to say is about the parking on Eastside Parkway. And I know we haven't really officially got a plan for that yet, but I just want to put on the table that some of the residents of Eastside Parkway are concerned about losing all their parking. So we have to take that into consideration.
So, as I said, you know, we have to develop the managed parking plan. So, you know, we're showing, you know, we actually have a little excess capacity. And this needs to be worked out so that, you know, I think in the past it's been done where people, you know, you have like a parking permit and would be assigned to some staff, and then there would be spaces assigned to people that live. So during the day there would still be some spaces available, and then when school was out, of course, all the parking's available to the residences, and then it's kind of sharing with the park, which also gets the benefit of having a lot of additional parking for the activities that happen there. I think it's way more organized than what happens here today.
Good. Yes, I think we've really hit a home run on the circulation. This is a much better configuration than before, and I think that closing off that street has made it much safer for the kids. My comment on the historic look of the building, I think you've done a very good job in showcasing the original building and having the new wings, really show it off. By the difference in look. And one question I had was about solar. Is there, I know I've asked the question before, and there is solar opportunity. Can you point where solar might go?
So certainly there would be opportunities here, an opportunity here. I don't know if really on a stable roof. I don't think so. Through lots of conversations on the gymnasium, we've touched our mechanical units within the gym, it falls within the trusses. So, and that was to, again, keep it low and not extra screening and those things, which really opens up the opportunity there, which, by the way, is for application.
And the mechanicals that will go on top of the building, I know they'll be at the Golden Myer House, they were tricking themselves because they wanted to put some solar on the roof, and the mechanicals made it very difficult because of their placement. So I take it that you've got that all mapped out. And
I wouldn't say that we have it all mapped out, but, you know, there are zones that we can create. I mean, most of our mechanicals just want to go down the middle, you know, the middle spine. Again, what I would say is, you know, the opportunities are on the flanking side, and really, for the most part, this entire gym, because there are no mechanical things that have to go through this space, it's just the gym.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably some vents or some sort of fresh air. But I think this is the greatest opportunity, and again, it faces directly south, and that's really where you want them to be.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. I have a couple questions too, but I'd like to open the public hearing if there aren't any more questions from any counselors or from the school committee or department. And I'd like to open up the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to have a say on this project this evening. No way. Stand up and say your name and address, and let's know how you feel.
Sure. My name is Allison Young. I live at Washington Harvard Street, and I've been to a lot of these meetings over the past few years, and I just have to say, I love this design. I love how the park and school are joining in to be an asset to the entire city for generations, and that I just can't wait to see it built. And I love the treatment with the glass and the cleaner kitchens and the third building that was talked about. So, it's a wonderful job.
Oh, no, no. We just
okay.
I just parked her on.
Off car, the 1.65 Parkway. The last big complex that was put in our neighborhood was Cattle Park Village. And I'm thinking back on a couple of spillover effects in that development 20 years ago. A lot of noise from the HVAC. We're going to be adding systems here for the air conditioning. That led to a legal lawsuit. There was also a lot of light spillage that the developer had to mitigate. I've noticed that the city, in installing LED street lamps, the models you selected have been illuminating everything, not just what they were designed to illuminate. And I had to request abatement and mitigation in my own neighborhood of my entire interior was being wrecked. So I would urge you, particularly in the plaza on the east side, there will be widespread acceptance of the need for lighting there. But if you could not make it all night lighting that shines out at the rest of our neighborhood, we have issues all over the city with this, I think. And I notice a lot of difference when I'm out in the evening walking with a new lighting program. So,
it's a great point.
Noise and lighting, this has to be dealt with afterwards with Cattle Park Village. Maybe by thinking about this ahead of time, you can have that
on. Those items get incorporated, you know, this screening where, you know, we'll look at noise. You know, there is a noise ordinance, and we do follow it. So, you can't create noise at the property line that's 5 decibels higher than what the existing ambient background noise is. So those will get studied, and lighting, absolutely. We have we have a lot of work to do on lighting, but our lighting designer on the team is very good. If you get a chance, I encourage you to go by Anger. Again, they're LED lights, but they're cut off, and they are directed in the right places. We don't want light still, and we want the energy efficient too, so you know, we're very cognizant of that as well.
So I think that's a very useful comment, and I know the architects heard it, and it's something that could get brought back to our design review committee.
I think it's on the way.
The phase in design development is turning these beautiful drawings into a real building, and that's actually a lot of work, and that's a very useful comment. Thank you. Sorry.
Bud Grantham, 46 Eastside Parkway, under down at the corner of Newville Avenue, and have two questions for you. Is the movement of the softball field, the relocation of the softball field, is that a done deal?
It is not a done deal. Maybe we go back to the site plan. We have put it here, we had originally proposed it and calculated, you know, that it fit and laid it out. At that time, there was interest in also having this soccer field. I have been in some conversations with Commissioner DeRubis, who told me that, in fact, they now feel that they are more interested in perhaps flipping the softball field, which is here, to this side. They have less interest in the soccer field and leaving this area to be continued to be less appropriate. So if we can respond to it, we'll work with them. It's their desire, and if they want to have it over here, then, you know, we can study that and work with that. And we've kind of looked at it, so we know that we can get our layout in there. And exactly, we flipped around a little bit, and, you know, this is north, and where does the batter's eye want to be? Today it's the other way. So, but the short answer is we'll work with Parks and Rec. And I think it's probably aiming towards moving into that location.
Because another would require movement of some existing playground facility and to relocate the softball field. Not a rented field.
Correct.
My second question has to do with the additional parking along Newside Parkway. Down that way. From sitting out on my patio, I can tell you that parking on one side of the street is all Newside Parkway is fixed. The screen gestures I hear periodically from people who are competing for the same space as teachers. So, and then you're also competing with dog park users, which sometimes they are significant, tennis players and basketball courts. And seven Mondays a month, the senior boxing tournament goes on here, and that takes a lot of
time. So the advantage of flipping it, so you are correct, we can really only have parking on one side. The advantage to flipping it is that it's all against the park, which is continuous and uninterrupted, as opposed to the residential side, which has more driveway entrances and puts the parking, you know, a lot closer to the residences. But, you know, we need to really, you know, get with everybody and figure out the extent of this parking and where is it desirable and work with the community.
Would an item like that go to traffic council?
It will. We'll work through the traffic group, and it'll end up at traffic council. Absolutely.
Yep. It'll follow the normal.
Well, I understand. I think normal. So that everybody knows what the normal process is.
I'm sorry. We'll follow the process.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Yes, please. I'm Jennifer Abbott. And I also just want to reiterate the thank you, and I totally agree that for many of the streets in the neighborhood, one side of the street of all the vacant handle under parking on quite a few of the streets in the neighborhood for parents and staff as well. So, but just my heartfelt thank you to everyone in the team that worked on these projects. I think that not only the connection of the school and the park, but just to finally have a facility that has meets the needs of the students is going to be fantastic for the future of the neighborhood. So thank you.
Duncan Sanger, I'm on JC, I'm a parent. Just a quick question about the traffic flow. The street, I can't remember the name of the street that is to the far right with the blue arrows.
This one?
Yeah.
Norwood,
exactly. Because currently people come into the school here to come in from the opposite direction.
Right, they travel this way.
Is that still a two-way street?
So this would, you know, you wouldn't want to have people come down. Our expectation is that, you know, you really come through and you go back in that direction. So generally speaking, yes, that would offload out in that direction. Because we want people to always move in this direction, so we always have the flow of the traffic going the same way. So. Those are things that we also would be discussed with the transportation folks in the city and would end up with the traffic council. This will always flow out, so you know you can't leave a place where someone can't pretty fit out. You would want to make sure that they understood that if they came down, you were going to traverse back up clearly.
So there may be more traffic from entering Bruce Street than Cabot because they can no longer come in via Norwood.
Except that we have the ability now to utilize this access. So if you're on this side, or if you want to come down and come up, you now have a way because the street's gone, and that was one of the, you know, our team's design issues was by creating this RLS safe and non-vehicular, you're distributing the vehicle. So today, everybody comes down bridges and everybody comes out parking, because that's the only way you can go. Now we have the ability to collect some percentage of the vehicles and have them go that way. And again, you know, we model these things, but people kind of do what they're going to do, but eventually people will figure out the path of least resistance. And, you know, quite clearly, if you can park and walk or drop off and let, you know, and know that the students are going to be safe, then, you know, we envision that, you know, that that's going to be very helpful.
Okay. Anybody else? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing. And so we don't need to vote on that in this committee, actually. So,
I guess we're ready to move to approval.
I think that we are. I'd like to just say one thing. Actually, I had a couple of questions, but they're not really, not headed to the questions. We have a two-page detailed memo from the Design Review Committee, and I know you all have it, and attended the last Design Review Committee meeting and so forth, and I wanted to, first of all, give them some great kudos, because they have done an enormously helpful job for us, lots of hours, and they really dig into this, and the many iterations and so forth. They have a list of 10 items that they, in particular, want to make sure that the design team and the city work on as you develop this building. Not going to go through the whole list. The one that I want to mention, it was also mentioned in the planning department report, although in the planning department report it said they wanted to treat materials and so forth if there was going to be any such major changes. And I think there's probably not going to be what we could consider to be major changes, but I would like to set up at some point or a couple of points as we move through the process some reviews to take a look at those things.
We'll meet with design review committee. You know, we're going to work on our schedule. We have a ton of work to do.
Right. I'd like to have updates in
the
committee at least once, but maybe twice, depending on what's going on. I think we've solved an enormous
We will continue to work with the DRC and the school building committee with the creation of the MSBA. So we need to, all of that is, you know, I know people feel like, oh, we're finally there. We've gotten to the point where hopefully everybody has agreed on what we're now going to really go and roll our sleeves up and get to the next level.
Right. I understand that, and I just want to make sure everybody who's here understands that there's a lot of work yet to do. And so the comments that you heard tonight really are useful to us.
Absolutely.
But in addition, I want to make sure we have a chance to look at the materials before, which we don't always. For every project, I have to do, but we'd really like to do that. The elevation for beautiful buildings and stuff.
And again, I think just trying to follow the program that we set up. You know, obviously we're going to work with the design review committee and the school building committee, but then we do our periodic updates to the school committee and city council. And that will continue in the same process. So we'll talk about the materials and we'll, we're all going to follow our same process.
All right, thank you. So, Susan, would you like to make a motion?
Could I just make one? I wrote it down, I forgot to say it. The north side of the building, the new, I don't know if it's kitchen or not, but it's awfully harsh compared to the rest of the building. If there's any way to soften the way that looks, that would be my only suggestion. And I didn't see that on any other list, so
again, we have to continue to sort of make these things evolve, but we'll continue to look at that.
Yeah.
It We don't know if he's got to keep working.
Yeah. So, as I said before, it's been a long and, as you said, windy road, but I think it matches to a good place.
I think the plan over time has really evolved very well, and I think it does a pretty good job.
So I move to approval.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve on the site plan of tonight's plan review. All in favor? It is unanimous among the six of us assembled. I will say that Councilor Gentile, who will be taking this up in finance next week, is on business trip. That's why he couldn't be here. And Councilor Lappin Okay, the next item on the agenda is item number 358-16, Hazard of the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate $46,590,000.
Sorry, that's me.
$46,590,000 from bond indebtedness for the purpose of funding the renovation and construction of an addition at the Cabot Elementary School.
Ooh. And who is there anyone who wants to say anything about this? We obviously know they have to do.
Everybody has that?
Yep. Okay.
That's our basic breakdown. As we had discussed in our update, you know, in just round figures, it's a $49 million project. We have a $50 million reimbursement from the NFPA. The local share remains at $35 million.
That's
the number. I don't think that number's gonna
No, we just got an update from yesterday as we're going through the numbers, and the total cost of the project is just a hair below 49, and their reimbursement to hear about the $14 million. So.
Okay, well, we didn't hear that before, but do you have any more recent estimates that you're working on in terms of how you're tracking those numbers as you develop the building?
We have a full top to bottom construction cost estimate.
The last one we heard. Okay, so you're still on track with that?
Yep.
Okay, I'm inclined to just move ahead with this and let finance get into any particulars. Okay, Susan wants to move it, but...
No, just quickly, the contingency seems low to me, our $49 million.
So you're looking at which number?
The
owner's contingency. So the MSBA divides the contingency. Tell me when I get it wrong. They divide the contingency in two pieces. There's an owner's contingency and the construction contingency. Now, under their rules, the construction contingency has to be available, and that's the bigger number. And the owner's contingency is the smaller number. Now, normally we would do this in reverse. Councilor Gentile would have the council hold the larger portion, and as we did on Jervis, for example, the split. But under the MSBA rules, the city has to agree to make that contingency funding available. But the percentage is...
There are 5% of the construction contingency and 1% of the owner's contingency. That's pretty critical.
Okay, I was doing a back of the envelope, it just seemed lower, but that's fine. And as can I just want to let you know, I'm not on finance, I'm sure we'll help, but as you described it, right, am I reading it the wrong way? Are you saying that the owner's contingency, like for instance on Jervis, was the higher number?
No.
Because I'm reading it the way you described it, the opposite of what you described it, because I'm looking here, the construction contingency is the recommendation of the mayor with the approval of the board to transfer it into the owner's contingency.
It,
they describe it the owner's contingency. Did you describe it the opposite?
Let's go back. I'll describe it, and we'll see if I said it incorrectly. So the NSCA requires that the construction contingency has to be agreed and put in place.
Yeah.
So, and then there's an owner's contingency, yeah, which they recognize for other costs.
Yeah.
Okay. In Fraser, for example, the construction contingency is a larger percentage than, we just said 5% and 1%, right. So the construction contingency is a larger number. In terms of Newton, that becomes the mayor, what we call the mayor's contingency, the construction contingency. And the lower number is the board's contingency. And the board's contingency, the city council's contingency can't be moved, without prior approval. So on Inger, for example, when we got our final bid for FF&E, we came back and said, okay, you know, there's the MSCA allows so much, here are our final numbers, and the board council, whichever you were at the time, voted to take all the contingency to supplement the difference in FF&E and technology. So does this not say...
I don't want to belabor it. I'll let finance deal with it. I'm just reading the asterisk.
Transfers from the construction contingency may be made with the prior approval of the mayor.
Right, so he can utilize that.
That's correct, because that's
and then if he needs more, he has to come to us on the construction.
On the owner's contingency,
right?
No, it's the construction contingency is used on the mayor's approval. Okay, first order of business, fix the
this is kind of important.
Yeah, it is.
The difference of the money is that if the mayor needs more than 360, he has to.
Right, it has to be that way under MSBA. So
fair enough.
Yep.
All right. I believe that Councilor Albright has made a motion to approve and send it to finance. All in favor? We have everybody. Thank you.
Great.
Okay. The next item is 360-16.
Was it?
Okay. All right. Ready? Item 250-16 is an EverSource petition for grant of location at Craft Street. Please join us.
Thank you.
Call up the chair.
Hi, Karen Johnson on behalf of EverSource Energy, and I'm here to obtain a grant of location to relocate one pole on Craft Street for the Fessenden School to widen the entrance.
Okay, and we have a map in our packet. Does anyone have any comments or questions about this?
We have a map.
It's in our packet. I looked at it before. It's a pretty straightforward item, but do you have any comments or questions? Anyone? This is a reward, by the way. It is my reward. I'm going to give you a minute. Okay, so you're moving it to a grass area sideways, is that what that is?
It's calling at
Is that the berm of the block?
The berm of the block, yes.
That's on 7th property.
No, I understand. On the sidewalk?
On the, right, in the grass here.
In the grass here, that's what I call the berm. Okay, would you like to make a motion?
Yes.
Motion to approve. Thank you. All in favor? Terrific. Thank you. Sorry for the wait, but we had a rather large petition ahead of you.
That's fine. It's kind of interesting.
Okay. Next item is 351-16, Ms. Regan. National Grid petition for grant of location in Austin Street.
Good evening. My name is Josh Regan, and I'm a private representative from National Grid. And tonight, National Grid hereby respectfully requests your consent to install and maintain approximately 2,000 feet more or less of 8-inch gas main in Austin Street, Newton, from the existing 8-inch gas main at Mount Vernon Street, easterly to the existing 8-inch gas main at Walnut Street, all of which to replace and abandon the existing 8-inch main in Austin Street.
Is this something that the gas company is doing, or are you doing it at the request of the customer? We're doing it because it's going to be work done by the Public Works Department
in the city of Newton.
We're going to get in there either before or after they ask, because this can't really happen on Austin Street.
Okay,
you're getting in before.
Would the engineering department like to comment? We're doing water work right now.
Great. And is this because the existing main is old and leaky?
Yeah, the existing main is cast iron. It was put in 12-foot length.
The existing main is cast iron.
When it was put in, was the length of each piece was 12 feet long. Right. And water and sewer, they have to go lower than us because they can't, you're up for the water pipes to freeze. So our main becomes an encroachment. So we have to move it. Get it out and get the plastic in.
Okay. So this is on National Grid.
Yeah.
Okay. Terrific. Mm-hmm. What word is this? I love how this works installing the water.
Come on. Are you
part of it? No,
but
it's
2,000 feet.
All right. Any more comments or questions?
That's testing.
Testing and deliberating. That's a great combination.
That's been recorded.
It was. We've been recording that.
All right. I'm opening the public hearing. Is there anyone from the city or one citizen who would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, and I close public hearing.
Okay, so now,
thank you. Have a motion to approve. All in favor? Thank you. Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay.
Next, we're going to talk about snow.
And I will.
May I read the item?
Yes. Okay.
So, item 335-16. We actually have two items I have to read into the agenda. I'm going to take up 335-16 and 338-16, which we've kept it on the docket this week. Together, and Councilor Danberg and Maureen Lemieux will tell, and Jim McGonigal will tell us why we're doing that. So I won't read the entire item. 335-16 is the request for ordinance amendments to require removal of snow from sidewalks, and this is Councilor Danberg's ordinance. And then 338-16 is to extend the trial program that we have now for snow and ice removal from sidewalks, also from Councilor Danberg. And I'll just say this is the city use of ordinances, chapter 26, section 8B trial program. And it's to do it from November 1st, 2016 to November 1st, 2017. Okay, take it away. Who's on first?
Okay. We at the end of the discussion, we'll move to hold 335-16 because the city really needs more time to work on some of the details. And what we would like to do is to, and I will be docketing, in all likelihood, a new item to do basically three things. And I don't want to steal your thunder from this, but actually, why don't I head it over to Maureen and she can explain what they are. Quickly, we want to beef up the commercial. We want to move the amount of time that's allowed for commercial clearing from what is now 24 hours that we think is excessive to 12 hours, which is more reasonable. I would have moved it to 3 hours, but we settled on 12.
Good thing you're not.
The other thing is we want to bring, we want to speak to four units and more of housing, or actually more than four units, I think we're going to look at, and bring those apartment buildings into the commercial area so that they are required to shovel. Because I have had, on a couple of occasions, chase down apartment building management companies, and on one occasion was told that they were residential and therefore did not need to shovel that walk. And the other thing, commercial, four more, and institutions, we're going to, institutions are not spoken to anywhere in the ordinance. And this would include churches, synagogues, all kinds of institutions that we have, BC law, but right now there is, we have an ordinance that speaks to commercial, but we don't have anything in the ordinance that speaks to any of these institutions that really need to clear their lots. They do. They have big commercial contracts with flowers, and along Center Street right now, we've got two or three of these organizations that every year have to be reminded, including a school for the blind that does not always jump to clearing its lots. So, we're going to clarify that, and hopefully that we'll get agreement on that. So go ahead, Maureen.
And the fine.
Oh, and the fine. Why don't you speak to the fine?
So, this is Councilor Danberg has worked with the law department, and I'm sure from talking to all of you, what we seem to have found is that the police don't know if an entity is on their first, second, or third fine, and so the graduated fines really had become somewhat problematic. And so the recommendation is going to be for it to be a $100 fine whenever, each time. However, if the police went back the next day and it's still not doubled, they'd get another $100 fine. So I think what we're looking at is just doing $100 no matter what, so nobody has to figure out if they alarm their second or third time.
So, we were all surprised at our last meeting when it seemed as though a lot of work had been done. Now I understand you're not intending to take up the residential ordinance again this year, but the details you have to work out are about enforcement. We were surprised that the police came and told us that they really weren't on board with this.
We were surprised too.
I heard that. So,
Said to Councilor Danberg, at the end of the meeting that we had, we brought the different departments in. Public Works was there, the police were there. What I had said to Alderman Councilor Danberg, and I will say to every one of you, you are the policy-setting board or council for this city. Whatever you choose to set, we as an administration will do our very best to implement. Now, might just be fraught with problems in the sense that we may be sitting some wards against each other. People may think that we're targeting the more densely populated areas of the city, of course, because that's where we have a lot of the problems. However, unequivocally, I want to say to this committee, and would certainly say to the entire council, whatever you have, we will do our best to enforce. Whether we have departments who like it or don't like it, we would certainly try to figure out how to do it.
Mark?
I appreciate that. I did hear, and was sympathetic to the police department, the representative's statement that they're working very hard in community policing type initiatives, and this, in their view, would undermine it. I also think there's legitimate concerns about using limited numbers of rather highly trained individuals to issue snow citations. I mean, that to me is far more what you would like a parking ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a parking enforcement group of folks who do their job well. So I just suggest that may be a better way to go. And, you know, I think it's probably a much better way to go.
Okay. Anybody else? Scott.
So just a couple questions. So Councilor Danberg mentioned that you were going to document some pretty specific items.
Yes, because these items are concerned with existing ordinances, not the residential snow clearing ordinance. So they have to need separate docket items. I've spoken to Marie on this, and Marie knows how it would need to go. And we have right now we have two snow ordinances. One is commercial, you're required to clear, and the other one is no snow dumping. You can't have your driveway guy push your snow out across the street and dump it onto the sidewalk across the street. Or you can't shovel it. And those two are on the books and they have fines. And right now they're graduated fines. And so we're looking to beef up the commercial in the way that I explained and make them flat fines so that the police find that easier to administer. And also, we probably want to talk about the expansion of the number of miles.
Okay.
Well, I thought it was fine. Yeah. So I don't know if that was my question. My question is, if you're docketing some pretty specific stuff, why are we holding 335.16?
Because
it seems to kind of fall under that umbrella, and I just don't want to duplicate.
It doesn't really fall under that umbrella. What does fall under that umbrella is the expansion of the number of miles that we're going to talk about city is looking to clear with machinery, and that's what we're going to talk about now. That needs more work, and that's why we're holding this item.
Okay. The other thing I was curious about is, so on the
commercial, right, the over four units, is there's some contradiction in terms of, like, when we did the second meter, anybody that's over four units was considered commercial. Because
that's what we wanted.
We couldn't grant them a second water meter. Technically, they're residential, but what we're saying here is that right now, the example you gave, someone said, well, we're residential, we don't have to do it. So are we trying
to make it match?
Or what are we
doing? Yeah, we want to make it match what we're doing with water and sewer.
Water and sewer, they don't get the same benefit of a second meter.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. Determining, like, what's residential and what's commercial, because in one, what?
I think what could be, if I could try to say that a little differently, I think you're trying to define commercial in the same way that we define it in our
water and sewer. Yeah, we want it to match.
Not make any other aspect of the program similar, but just use the same definition so that units
of buildings that come over 4 years will be commercial. What was described to us during the water debate on irrigation was anything over 4 units residential is considered commercial.
Right.
What he's trying to say is, but it was based on, like, what the real estate community. So are we trying to come up with an actual defining of 4 units and over is commercial? Let me get the angle I'm getting at. Because I said this during the irrigation debate that I want to have 4 units and over that are residential have the ability to get a residential second water meter. They're residential. That's what they are. At the time, everybody said, don't docket the amendment. Let's get it straightened out. Let's see how it goes. Let's see what we do for rates. So I'm just concerned
I can answer that.
All right.
And we're not redefining these four and over as commercial. We are placing the four and over or the over four residential in the commercial category for purposes of snow removal.
And that's allowable by law?
We can define it.
On the residential second meter, that we don't say, wow, that's not defined. I just want it to be, if we're talking apples to apples, I just want it all to be apples to apples.
According to Marie Lawler, we can do that.
We are not going to call an apartment building or whatever, a condo building, we're not going to call a property that has more than four residential units on it. We're not going to call it commercial anywhere. So when this gets written up, I believe, and I'm not a lawyer, so Marie might tell me I'm completely wrong, but what I believe it would say is that this applies to commercial properties, institutions, and residences that have more than four units.
So there's an ordinance applied.
Yes. So we would not. Exactly. Okay. So we can't change what it all has to do with the taxes that they pay. So if you're a residential unit, you're paying the residential rate. We can't all of a sudden make other properties commercial.
Well,
you
can't
my argument, though, for the second meter, right?
We
should
talk about what
you
want
to do. Yes.
You're down to 23.
I just would like to talk about it.
So, in water sewer, we came up with our own definition. We decided we wanted to have a non-residential and a residential category, right?
Yep.
So residential was everything up to 4 units on a site, on a lot. We did that for the purposes of the water and sewer program. I don't know why we couldn't modify that. I also don't know why we couldn't take up
I just wanted to make sure I'm not supporting something that in the end is contradictory to something else.
Okay. So I think that the new language about the commissioner endeavoring to minimize blocking of sidewalks, is that new language?
Where did you find that?
It's new section 26-10. And it's municipal snow removal operations dash clearance standards. And it uses that the Commissioner of Public Works shall endeavor to minimize blocking sidewalks and intersections, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then later it says the Commissioner, to the extent such removal is feasible as determined by the Commissioner. It just feels a little weak.
That's language that is going to be looked at further. This is not, we're moving to hold.
I would say we should look at that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So we have two things to do. We would like to, we're looking for a motion to approve item 338-16 and a motion to hold item 335-16. Would you like to do those one at a time?
Oh, sure.
I'm sorry. I'm going to pass this.
Go ahead.
So at this point, what you're saying is we're going to do one more year of trial.
Correct.
And come back next fall or next summer and finally vote. Might be May, but vote one way or the other.
I didn't do it in May, actually,
I just mean, stop without saying, vote no. I'm definitely going to vote.
Oh, I'm going to do it sooner.
Yeah. Let's have an upset.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that, so for right now, we need to, it expires on November 1, so we have to re-up it until we take it up again.
I think Scott has a question.
So just want to be clear, we're voting on extending what's currently in place.
Correct.
Yes.
We're not modification.
Correct.
Right. And we're not taking up the amendment until next time.
Right. And so what we are going to supply, I'm here, so I have to do my little spiel here. So what we are going to be doing over the next month, we know that people were saying last time we're asking, well, what would it cost if we did 100 miles? What would it cost if we did 150? What would it cost if we did 200? We don't want to approach it that way. What we met with Councilor Danberg, I had a crew in here the other day. What we're doing instead, what the mayor really wants to do, is figure out how do we accomplish what our goal is. And our goal is to hopefully make the city so that it is as walkable in January and February for people who want to walk places as it is in September and October. And so we're going to have the map redone so that we can understand again, because every year it changes with where bus stops could be or where we have different kids walking to the different schools. So we're working with the school department to update that. The mayor wants to look at four key areas, village centers, our transportation nodes, our bus stops, and our school areas. And we're going to take a look and see if we can somehow standardize how far out people ought to be walking. And then once we do this, is what we'll be doing over the next several weeks, we'll figure out how many more miles we should be clearing as a city. We may get it to a point where you don't have anything to vote on. And it's not, and that we're not focusing on enforcement. What would be wonderful, folks, is if we could figure out where does it make sense for us as a city to do, and where does it not. So if there are areas.
This is where your dad hangs out every
But anyway, so the goal is for us to look at this yet again and figure out should we be going, I don't know how far, if we're going a quarter of a mile around the schools or whatever, you know, should we be going a half a mile? Where is that break point of where people drive their kids to school anyway, and where is it that they walk? And so we're going to work with the schools. We've got some surveys that we're even going to put out to see if we can understand where people are walking, so that we can make inroads into what it is that we ought to be doing. But to pick a number, first of all, I mean, I can't tell you what we're going to spend on snow removal this year. In the last 5 years, we had 1 year where it was $1 million and 1 year where it was over $7 million. So I can't just say to you, well, if we do 150 miles, this is it. And then the bigger question is, well, what 150 miles are we even going to spend?
Right.
So we really need to ask the question the other way and say, how do we make sure that people can get to public transportation? How do we make sure that we're not just doing the village center, but we're doing the arteries to the village center so that people, maybe they, if they live on a dead end or, you know, a small street, maybe they need to walk in the street to get to their main sidewalk if they're going to the village center. But we need to really look at this in a smart way and try to, and then, so we will be sending this out once we sit down and have the internal group do it. We will be sending this out to all of you for you to take a look at it in your area.
So
that's kind of where we are.
Just procedurally, we have only so many meetings left this calendar year. You're going to come back in with specific amendments to the commercial snow ordinance. At that time, is that going to be in 2 weeks?
That will be in 2 weeks.
Because okay. We won't be ready with this other plan.
No.
But the other plan isn't something that
we need to look
need
at before
to approve.
Mm-hmm. No, I just thought maybe we should want to.
No, we'll be sending out information to you.
Okay.
Right. We'll definitely send
that
out.
And are interested in hearing from all the wards when the list of streets goes out that and how far out they're planning to do. If you know that people don't walk that route, they walk this route.
Right.
Let the city know.
Okay, Martha.
So I think I said this. I'm pretty sure I said this before. I appreciate that the city plows. The problem then is what happens after the plowing when it gets packed down and it is incredibly icy and frankly really unsafe to walk. So I think one of the things we're going to need to do this winter, beyond just getting out there and doing the initial plowing, is making sure that it's not slippery afterwards. And that's one of the things in the ordinance anyways. I think that's been a huge problem for the city. And there's a lot of routes, frankly, where it's just, I don't think it's safe to walk on the sidewalk. So it's a challenge, because I understand that, but I just would urge you to take a look at that and try to do the best you can to improve that.
Yeah.
Just real quickly, I when this first came up, I don't know how many years we're talking now, maybe the trials in place, but if you recall, those of you on today, I put together about a 20-page packet of photos of things that we as a city continue to do poorly winter after winter, which was why I was really not in favor of implementing some, I didn't say this last time, I came in late, it was getting towards the end, which I was not in favor of implementing some sort of snow clearing ordinance because I felt it was unfair to fine people when we were doing such a poor job on our responsibilities. I wanted to just say it, I'm not saying this because, you know, you're here and it sounds great, but I think that in a couple of years, you know, I know Shane's been here for two winters now, maybe two winters?
One winter.
Just one?
They've both been here for one.
All right, well, that's even better because I saw some serious improvement over the time. These things that I've relayed, you know, on some of those things that have improved. So I really think that that's the kind of tweaking the plan. I think that Vicky's put a lot of work into this. I think the plans could somehow be married a little bit, and I would be much more supportive of looking at some sort of married plan because of the improvements I think that have been made with contractors, with public spaces. I think we still have some work to do, but you guys only, you know, took it on one winter, and I was really impressed with what I saw. So I'm getting to the point where I'm not trying to be funny, warming up to it a little bit. But I just want to put that out there because I think it's important because if there are public, I mean, I was showing photos of where we were dumping snow in handicapped spots. It's like, and now we're going to turn around and support giving someone a $25 fine when we're dumping snow in a municipal lot in a handicapped spot. So I've seen those things clean up, and I'm just, if you can keep doing that, that's great, and I think it would help all of us.
No, it helped last year when you gave us all your hot spots. We have that list,
and you know, it goes out with the drivers, so they understand. The guys get to know it. When they hear us going back out, hey, we have one foreman dedicated just to the hot spot. So again, it's that communication that helps us also. We're doing things a little differently. We're using different materials. We're pre-treating the sidewalks before, which we never did. So all this helps with the issues we had in the past.
I think you have much, it seems that you have tighter control of your subcontractors, which has to be a really difficult job. And I know there's still a ways to go, probably, to ferret out who's doing the right thing and who isn't.
That's probably the single biggest thing that A, has caused the kinds of complaints that legitimately Scott from the very beginning has complained about in the city at 3 o'clock in the morning, the small plow drivers going 1, 2, 3, 4 up onto the four corners and making it impossible for anybody to ever get through those things. We have chasers, and in past years, the chasers were checking off that those streets were done properly. They're not being checked off anymore. They have to go back and redo it if they do it. And I think it takes a few years for people to understand that this city needs business, because business as usual has been conducted in that manner for 20 years. And then we started chipping away at this. And now I think in the past year, we've made an even bigger leap with Shane and Jim in getting this right, as right as we can get it. So this year it'll be even better than it was last year.
Yeah, that's
our
goal.
So we're going to look forward to another conversation about the commercial ordinance in 2 weeks, and we have two items to move.
Yes.
You're on.
Okay. I will move first item 338-16, the extension of the trial.
And we want to move approval.
And I would move approval on that, yes.
All right. All in favor of extending the trial? It's unanimous, 6-0. Thank you very much. And
I will move to hold on item 335-16. Which, as read into the record.
Okay. All in favor? Opposed. Thank you. 6-0. Excellent. We have only one item left on our agenda.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Sit home. Thank you so much for joining us.
1 minute.
Okay. Well, then we'll all be leaving together. 357-16. Nevada, the mayor requesting authorization to relocate, to reallocate the sum of $250,467.24 from the Wabin Hill Reservoir Improvements Account to be used for the decommissioning of the Stanton Avenue and Winchester Street Elevated Storage Tank.
The way that, so I don't know, Nadia, if we need to adjust the docket item, but maybe at least in your motion, Councilor Crossley, you can say, the way that we actually wrote the letter, this is really a $700,000 project.
Yeah,
so I want to make sure.
Yeah.
Right.
The numbers are different here. But they were coming from different sources.
They're coming from different sources. I just want to make sure that we're on the record and that you know what you're voting for, that it's really costing $700,000. Mm-hmm. We're taking $250,000 from the leftover money from the Wabin Reservoir, and then the other $450,000 is coming from a carry forward, which is what an R means, a capital account in the water department. So it's from the water reserve.
Oh, okay, everybody clear on that? So Mark had a question?
So the Wabin Hill Reservoir Improvements, that was for the Wabin Hill Reservoir that we acquired from the MWRA? Or
no.
Is this a different?
No.
This different.
That is 2011. The reservoir we're talking about is a covered reservoir where the communication tower is.
All right, that's a different, there's two different reservoirs.
Different.
All right.
Right,
so this is not the Wabin.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
This is not the CPA money. This is not the CPA money. This is the reservoir above that near Mount Alvernia.
Correct.
It's part of that secure tower installation of those.
Right. Like
yeah.
Yeah.
Just for the record, the contender would
you
like to explain what
this
is?
So I just want to know, for the Wobbin Hill covered reservoir, you had leftover funds from the project?
What happened up at that was in 2011, we wanted to reline and do some repiping inside the central core because of some corrosion. So we hired an engineer to come in, do the design, do some testing of the metal, and also to replace the roof of the reservoir. And you really had to do that in order to do the work inside the core of the reservoir. So we put it out to bid. There was a split bid, one for the central core, one for the roof. Well, nobody bid on the central core, and they wanted $60,000 or some change to put the roof on. And it was ridiculous. So we just tossed the bid. The work still needs to get done. It's being looked at right now with an engineer. We've had a couple big mechanical engineers up there to look at it because there's, you know, it's 100 years old. There's valves that are 100 years old that are corroded. You have to isolate certain chambers, so it's pretty intricate. Whereas in 2011, we're just going to freeze the core. Now we're going to do a little bit more intensive rehabilitation. So we're in the process of doing that. They're doing the design now. And once they get the design, it's going to be more than the $250,000, I'm sure. And we'll put it out there.
You're going to come back for a new appropriation for $300,000-$500,000.
Correct. But now what we did is the two tanks, we did rehabilitation. Years ago, I should say, a couple of years ago, we looked at it and we don't need it, so we're just trying to get rid of it.
Okay, I'm fine with it.
They've been scheduled for demolition in the CIP since the first CIP.
Yep, yeah, I know it's been there for a long time.
Correct.
That's fine. I'm fine with it. It's my word. I'll move it when you're
no longer in, sir.
When you're ready for it.
I understand. So, anybody else?
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim.